Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate with the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 249 or 48. It's not 250. I know that much. It's definitely not 247, and it's not 250. So it's in between there somewhere. So we're close to 250, which is kind of neat. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Bollins. We're reviewing Portrait of a Lady on Fire today, which you could consider to be a 2020 movie, but it also came out in 2019. It's in a weird in-between, but it's very good, and we're going to talk about it. And also, we're going to be doing, because we're doing Portrait of a Lady on Fire, we're going to be doing top five store smells. They're very similar things, so I am excited to talk about that, though. I have a list that is very firm, and I've tweeted it before, and I didn't make any changes to my list. So I'm excited to discuss store smells.
Is this top five or a draft? Because I made a list for both.
We'll do top five because I just feel like then you're going to start picking shit. Because this is best, by the way. There's a distinct and best are two very different lists in terms of store smell. So let's do best because you want to talk about the ones you feel passionate about. I'll leave it at that. What's going on other than that? What's happening in mask world? World living with masks and gloves. Still very.
I'm irrationally excited about this Michael Jordan documentary that if you're listening to this tomorrow, and probably I would say probably about like 60% of our audience has probably watched it, maybe. Even though I was telling Jeff before the podcast, like I'm a Michael Jordan hipster. It's really tough.
What do you mean?
Because I've lived in the Chicago burbs, not Chicago, but the Chicago burbs, like 94, 95, 96. And the way,
what's so special about those years?
The way people talk about Michael Jordan now reminds me of when I first discovered the Beatles when I was 18 and acted like I was the first person to discover them. So I feel like a lot of the MJ adulation that happens online now is by kids who never watched him play. And, you know, again, it's not right. It's hipsterism. It's wrong. Like, I shouldn't be gatekeeping liking Michael Jordan or not. But it just sets off this, like, old ass, like one of the few benefits of being old now is being able to look down on younger people for not being born sooner.
I mean, fair enough. I mean, just so you know, I don't want you to get mad at me, but I like Michael Jordan.
I'm not going to get mad. I'm saying it's irrational. It makes me feel like a dipshit.
Why?
But everybody feels that way about something. Everybody has like some sort of gatekeeping activity where they're like, oh, I hate people who are new to this, or I hate people for liking this or that.
I don't know if there's something like that for me where I'm like, how dare a young person like this thing that I used to like? That's crazy.
There was something the other day that I actually almost tweeted at someone, and I
just
stopped.
Just wait until you get fucking old because you're still young.
I stopped for a second and I was like, don't fucking tweet this. You're an asshole. Like, don't gatekeep this. But there was something, I'm not going to remember. There was something the other day, and it was definitely, like you said, it was something that I in my childhood. I did that a little bit with Arrested Development. My dad watched that when it first came out, and so I watched it with him. And I remember like liking that before it became very popular. And I did that for a while. And I'm like, don't be a douchebag. Just let people like the fucking show.
I think the only thing actually I did do with that was the movie Taken. Because the movie Taken, I know this sounds a really weird thing, but so like my uncle was on a trip in Europe and he got it on like Blu-ray or something because it came out in Europe like a year before it came out here. And he got it like a year ahead of it releasing in the US. And I told everybody like, yo, you got to watch this movie. It's so good. It's so good. It's so good. And like my friends all watched it on my like fucking cheap ass, I don't even know what, Nokia fucking DVD player at home. And like then we, when it came out in theaters, we all went and watched it. And I was like, see, I told you. And they're like, all right, cool.
Imagine if you like were a gatekeeper for like TikTok and you just replied to everyone now. You're like, yeah, I was on TikTok.
I was on TikTok like 3 years ago, dude. Like, where were you? Where were you when I was like writing about Dayu? What the fuck, dude?
If Taco Bell breakfast became as popular as McDonald's breakfasts, I'd gatekeep that. I'd be like, I've been telling you guys this for a long time.
Oh, I remember I was going to say, you know, I also kind of gatekeep mentally, but never say anything. Guy Fieri. When people are like, oh, Guy Fieri's cool. I don't know why we shat on him. And it's like, no, we didn't shit on him. I always like Guy Fieri, just a fucking legit earnest man who loves food.
Dude loves food.
I'm sorry that you got so caught up with yourself in 2014.
I'm trying to think of there's a lot of other people like that where people used to dump on them and now they think they're cool. I don't think Keanu's one of those guys, but Keanu's had a revival where I feel like people didn't really care about him. Like they only thought of him for like that weird 3 year period as the sad Keanu meme and all that and all this weird bohemian stuff they does, like whatever, living in like a $100,000 condo or some shit.
After The Matrix, people kind of dumped on Keanu because the rap with Keanu is that he couldn't act. Mm-hmm. And that still might be the case, but that's not the case universally. You got to find the right thing for Keanu. And that's not Keanu's fault.
Yeah, but acting, I feel like, is a little different because you have that ability to do something better. Like, yeah, Guy Fieri could release a better cooking show, but the cooking show was well-liked. He just still got dumped on. So his was a complete kind of reversal. And I think social media was kind of a big reason why for that.
Well, it's the whole Nickelback effect, right? Yes. It's when making fun of something becomes the meme in and of itself. And so, you know, for how many years straight have we heard Nickelback jokes, even though Nickelback has at least fucking five songs that bang.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never listen to them, but I never hear their big hits. And I'm like, it's not offensive to me in the way people make fun of it for.
Didn't they go on stage in like, I want to say Portugal or something, and like they pelted them with rocks?
Probably.
It's a sign of endearment.
And Chad Kroeger was like, you want us to play the fucking song or we're going to leave right now if you throw one more rock? And someone threw a rock at his head and then they left.
Didn't he end up marrying Avril Lavigne? Didn't Avril Lavigne, wasn't she married to the Sum 41 guy, Derek Weebly?
What and a fucking thousands fucking power trio of names right there.
Well, they're all Canadians. They're all Canadian 2000s, like came up in that Canada. Like what's the Hollywood of Canada? Like Toronto?
Like sure. I think they meant like people wise.
Is there a Hollywood part of Toronto where all the Canadian stuff gets made? Like now I'm really curious. What's the Hollywood of Canada?
Who do you were right about Chad Weebly, by the way. I didn't even need to look at his fucking name.
Derek.
Oh man, the way he spells Derek sucks. D-E-R-Y-C-K.
Ugh. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of buy that whole Avril Lavigne conspiracy theory.
It's not surprising.
But it's too specific to be wrong.
Most underrated Nickelback song is When We Stand Together. I'm going to end the pod with that song. That was my victory song on Big If True on Barstool Radio for a while.
They're a solid band.
It's different.
I wouldn't say I just don't think
if you get five bangers, like you're saying, I'll consider you solid forever. Like, I don't really care.
That's what I'm saying is that I would rather listen to Nickelback than like, I don't know. I don't want to offend anyone. But I think there are worse artists that people.
Chamillionaire.
I don't even know more than Riding Dirty. Couldn't tell That's you really another it. Song that Chamillionaire jumped on.
Remember White and Nerdy?
I do.
I had to introduce people in this household to Weird Al because no one had heard of him before, which is just deranged to me. Most of the younger people, but still, like no one had any idea.
He spans many generations.
He does, which is crazy. He's kind of old. I think he's closing in on 60 or something.
He looks great, dude.
He looks amazing.
He's got the he's juicing or something. Not like
carrot top.
Just like Juicero juice.
I got a gaming question before we move on, because I was thinking, I was watching all these old G4 TVs. By the way, I'm also looking at buying a PS3 just to play NCAA football for the remainder of quarantine.
It's not backwards, isn't it backwards compatible?
No, God, no. And I don't know if that's a Sony decision or if that's an NCAA thing where they don't allow people to play it. But no, you cannot play NCAA football on a newer gaming system. So I there's like a PS3 Slim for $60 on eBay. I might just get it. Anyway, we can do this quick. What is the one game that you've played that you've liked that is also admittedly super fucking lame? Like, it's a lame ass game. And I'll start with mine. I'll set the tone here. I was watching those old shows, Judgment Day, People in Canada Notice, Reviews on the Run. Fun watching like the sentiment around old video games, how people felt about them when they came back, like what they were reviewed and rated. There was a game called The Political Machine. It was like an election simulation, but it was like cartoony versions of all the like real people. Like there was really like Trump was actually in the game. This is from like 2004, like Arnold, Hillary, Obama, all these like old candidates, and you would simulate going to states and campaigning, and it was all just a map, and you would try to win states. Which, I mean, admit like a lame game, but for someone like me, I like elections. It was fun, but I know it was, and they reviewed it on the show. I know it is like the dweebiest fucking game of all time. That's my pick.
Oh man, I'm trying to think.
It's tough for me because I think all the games that a lot of people might consider lame, I consider very cool. So like Civ and stuff, a lot of people might consider Civ lame.
No, see, I wouldn't consider that.
That's what I'm saying.
Bad? Are you saying lame or bad? Because
no,
lame,
yeah, like, that's different.
Lame. Like I played the electoral college simulation game.
The way I'm trying to think of it though is like if I try to sit down like Ninja and be like, here, here's how you play Civ. I feel like he'd be like, fuck you, this sucks. You know what I mean? Like people who aren't used to like real time strategy games or anything like that will probably think something like that's lame.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because we do similar, we all kind of the same taste and shit. Maybe I can't see that because like mine is, I just think considerably it's dorky. It's a game you'd get in a political science class in college and play it. It was very fun. I enjoyed it, but
I had one of the tie-in games for games that tie into movies. I had the Bourne Ultimatum game and I played that a lot and it was not good. It was terrible. But I think I played the whole game through like 10 times for some reason.
So I don't think this game is lame, but I think it's also, it's one of my favorite video games of all time. And this particular version is aged so horribly. I'm going to send you the opening to watch later, but it's called Lunar Silver Star Story. And then there's a sequel called Lunar 2 Eternal Blue. And I think they're two of the best Japanese RPGs of all time. Like Lunar was released, I want to say 93 for the Sega CD, and the westernization of the game put in some like really odd like music choices and some singing components to it, which was like, I don't know. I think that could be kind of lame, but I was really into it at the time, and I still think it's a good game. I think there are like lame components with a lot of the westernization of like are games that have like a very Japanese sensibility to them.
Yeah. JRPGs in general, I think like a lot of, Western brain people just don't vibe with it for some reason.
Well, even in Final Fantasy VII Remake, there's a lot of body language that I think is very foreign to me as an American, just like just thumbs up and stuff like that. Like, I don't know if culturally that's like an appropriate way to react or whatever, but like, I'm just like watching, I'm like, who the fuck reacts like that?
This episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool brought to you in part by Death Wish Coffee. Actually, part of the reason why I'm awake right now is because I had Death Wish Coffee today. Death Wish Coffee will hit you. And it's delicious too. That is
so good.
That's no like fucking around coffee like that. You're not drinking that just because you like a little something warm and maybe a small hit of caffeine. Death Wish is going to hit you. Smooth, bold taste will wake you up and get you ready to take on the day. It's available in whole bean ground. There are special Death Cups, which you can put into your Keurig or however you brew coffee. And cold brew cans. Cool cans, too. Again, I mentioned this last time we did a read for them. It's neat to have them in the cans. You wish you weren't in quarantine because you bring them to the office and people are like, what's that skull and crossbones on your desk? That's badass. Crack a can of cold brew with a smooth, strong taste. packs 300 milligrams of caffeine per can. Subscribe and save 10% on coffee that's shipped right to your door when you want it. That's right. We want it to help you up your coffee game, up your caffeine game, because I imagine if you're not drinking Death Wish, it's pretty weak. Deathwishcoffee.com/lights. You can also enter to win a MacBook Pro, Death Wish Cold Brew, Barstool Sports merchandise, and a year's worth of Death Wish coffee. That's deathwishcoffee.com/lights. If you're looking for some coffee ASAP, you can also receive 50% off your entire purchase with promo code LIGHTS. Check it out now. Why not? You're not going to, I mean, you're likely not going to your local coffee places because most of them are usually closed. I know, like, some of the popular places. What the fuck is that?
No, I'm sorry. The Rock's live on Instagram right now.
Okay. I'm sure he's drinking some Death Wish coffee. Just say he is for the sake of the ad.
Yes.
Okay.
He is promoting the coffee. Yeah,
he's like, my rock cheat day today is 40 cups of Death Wish coffee. Anyway, lights, deathwish.com, deathwishcoffee.com/lights. Get 50% off your entire purchase with the promo code LIGHTS. Check it out. First up, Artemis Fowl, officially hitting Disney Plus on June 12th, 2020. That's a ways away. I don't understand why you would delay this during the quarantine and then, like, put it at a time where, realistically speaking, we don't know. Like, places are, like, there's already states opening up, right? It's like, mm-hmm. by June 12th, there could just be theaters open. Like, who knows? Like, it's unlikely. But my point is, wouldn't you just drop this now? Like, that's almost 2 months away. It's just under 2 months away. And on top of that, like, I mean, maybe they're trying to build the hype up more. That could very well be it. Let's remind everyone, Artemis Fowl is a 12-year-old genius and descendant of a long line of criminal masterminds. He searches for his father, who has mysteriously disappeared, comes into conflict with the hidden world of the fairies. You got Josh Gad, Colin Farrell, Judy Dench is in the movie. Whatever. There's Josh Gad plays a dwarf? Yeah, Mulch Diggum's a dwarf, and like one of his powers is he farts dirt or something like that.
Farts dirt.
I mean, we're gonna review it. So,
what was the original date again?
Like already, I think. Let me.
May the fourth be with Artemis.
With Artemis
Fowl. Well, no, originally August 9th, 2019. And then it was May 29th, 2020. So actually not that far off.
At first I was like, maybe they want to promote it more because like they're like, hey, we're doing a good thing. We're putting it on streaming for you. Isn't that what you hogs want? But like, I don't really know what more you can promote with this. It's like, it's Artemis Fowl. You know the name. You know the story. Go watch the movie. You got nothing else to watch, bitch.
I don't know the story.
Neither do I. That's what I want to find out. But I know the name for some reason.
And like, also Kenneth Branagh is doing, and like, I like him, but let's not pretend he's released a bunch of good movies in the last 15 years.
You mean Shakespeare wasn't a good movie? You're trying to tell me Murder on the Orient Express wasn't good?
I mean, some people like the Cinderella movie with Lily James.
Which one was that?
It's like the first Disney live action.
I thought that was Enchanted.
No, Cinderella was like the first one.
Oh.
Yeah, he directed it. Lily James was Cinderella.
Damn, I don't even remember that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe they're going to keep pushing the date back in case the theaters open back up.
Maybe?
No, I don't think that.
No, they've committed to it. They've committed to this shit.
It's a weird move. I don't get it.
Whatever. Shout out to...
Probably want to wait till The Last Dance is over. Seeing that's like the only two Disney company IPs being released.
True. And the Clone Wars. By the way, if you have not gotten into the Clone Wars, they did something wild on Friday. They are essentially releasing a movie broken up into four parts. And they promoted it that way as well. And the way the episode intros, it's an alternate movie to Revenge of the Sith that covers the Siege of Mandalore, which is going to have a lot of ties to Mandalorian. Honestly, you could probably watch, if you've never watched Clone Wars, you could probably watch these last four episodes.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally totally fine.
Yeah, I mean, do some catch up. Our YouTube channel, Lights, Camera, Barstool on YouTube, we have a whole catch up of the entire series. But they are releasing like very well done, thought out. Not that the show wasn't beforehand, but it is a cinematically made Star Wars animated movie that coincides with Revenge of the Sith. Very fucking cool.
Awesome. It's an awesome series in general. Like, if you're a Star Wars fan, you should be watching.
Yeah. But, like, what we were a little disappointed with some of the middle of this new season, but and what she said, we said, if the back four are not good, this is a big bummer of a season. The first part of this, like, four-part movie, amazing, has made up for everything. It was so fucking good. Speaking of Disney properties, James Gunn has apparently said that Guardians of the Galaxy, he doesn't have he doesn't have any plans to do a fourth. What do you think? As a fan, we're all fans of Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, do we think, you know, it was a trilogy from the beginning? Do we think that means they're not going to do it? We know that the characters weren't really going to be in it. They didn't want to do it if he wasn't involved as director, then he was brought back. They would have to have done it through contracts. But, like, it's tough because these are characters that are still very fresh and haven't been in a ton of stuff in comparison to, like, the Caps or the Thors or the Snorks.
I will always think that saying stuff like that is also a negotiation tactic.
That's fair.
Because before you pay for it, you never want to say, like, I'm completely committed to this franchise and I'll do whatever it takes to keep making these until I die.
And also, they were saying that too because James Gunn got kicked off, not because he naturally decided to quit. You know?
Right. Well, I guess my question is, like, do you think they'll do it if you say they're like, oh, there's Guardians, he's just done, but they bring in, you know, like a different director?
I think if it's someone they like, they wouldn't care. Like, if it was a Taika or something or someone else that they've all worked with before, I think they would enjoy it. I think someone with similar style, they wouldn't mind. But at the same time, I don't think that Guardians is something like, you know, whatever, Mission Impossible, where you could just keep moving this forward, like, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and, like, pretty seamlessly. Because it's so, like, tied into the rest of the Marvel universe. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind them slowly getting phased out and remaining just being something that we look at as a really great component of Marvel and not something that got stretched too thin, you know?
I think at some point the actors get tired of doing it.
That too.
I know, you know, they're getting offered a bunch of money, which can always help with people doing it. But at some point, like, you know, you got to wonder if Chris Pratt's like, I want to do other things, or somebody else is like, I want to do other things. Now, I think they can replace two of them pretty easily. Like, if Vin Diesel walked, I don't think that'd be a big deal. And I think they could just get, like,
an impressionist to do Rocket. Yeah,
what if that's the reason it crumbled, or, like, Diesel walked, he's out, can't do it, can't get him to replace him?
Diesel wanted $40 million. So we're done with this franchise.
We want $10 million a word.
But at the same time, it's like, it's also one of these things that we've seen actors, you know, Robert Downey Jr., the first one, I'd have to say, to take a decade-long commitment to doing this. So it's also something that I'd see if the cast was willing to do it and they're still making money, I don't see why they wouldn't keep making it, even turning over the director, because ultimately they're replaceable.
Is it wooden, or do you think they should keep making them after three, though?
I guess we got to see the story, right?
That's true, but also I just get afraid of that, right? Just all that getting diluted over time. But at the same time, it's fucking Marvel, and they're really good at not doing that.
Well, apparently part of the story, too, is that they're going to note how Peter Quill wanted to leave Earth immediately after the reversal of the snap. He fucking hates Earth because it reminds him of his mother. So that's, like, how much will they even cross over with other Marvel characters?
Every time he sees a planet, it reminds him of his dad.
Yeah. I hate you, Dad. Nothingness.
I think the whole Marvel universe is probably an exercise in questioning, does this really need to exist or not?
Sure.
That's very true. You can always replace it with different stories, and characters are replaceable too, and actors. This episode brought to you in part by the Barstool Sports Store. It's got you covered as we all stay home. Coffee mugs, sweatpants, they got face covers as well. Custom Barstool deck of cards. Barstool Store has it all. Keep you comfortable, entertained. Go to store.barstoolsports.com to shop now. Hugh Jackman turned down a role in Cats, which isn't entirely shocking that he was offered a role in Cats, because Hugh Jackman's offered a role in, like, everything musical. He said, Tom Hooper rang me earlier on because we did Les Mis together, and there were a couple of options there based on availability and time, and I really, yeah, I just wasn't available at the time. That sounds like he stopped mid-sentence and went, oh, I like Tom way too much to say what I want to say right now.
I'm not doing this without no buttholes, yeah?
That's my Australian accent. It sounds very English.
I think Hugh Jackman's probably one of the most polite men in Hollywood.
Yes.
And you'll never hear what he really thinks about it or what he really thought about his decision behind this.
It's good.
But if he were his alternate ego for some reason tied in my mind for all eternity, Russell Crowe, you would be hearing about it.
Oh, yeah. No, you would hear a fucking piece of his mind.
Well, like a big theme of Portrait of a Lady on Fire is saying things without actually saying anything. And I feel like he just said something by not actually saying anything. Because he tried his best to not say what he wanted to say. He just stopped himself instead of saying something complimentary, which would have been a lie.
Like, it's almost even better because now he can, you know, choose our own adventure of what he actually thinks about cats.
All he had to do is call it ambitious.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Ambitious would have been
the
right word to use in that situation. Just be like, it was an ambitious project. Tom had an ambitious vision with it, and unfortunately I couldn't get involved.
Two more pieces of news. Now we dip in the TV. Saved by the Bell reboot trailer. Reboot of Saved by the Bell. Saved by the Bell stars Mario Lopez and Elizabeth Berkley reprise their roles as A.C. Slater and Jesse in the first teaser trailer for the beloved sitcom's reboot. California Governor Zach Morris will find himself in trouble for closing too many low-income high schools and then propose that the affected students be sent to the highest-performing schools in the state, including Bayside High. The influx of new students will give the overprivileged Bayside kids a much-needed dose of reality. I mean, I'm not like Ken Jack. I mean, have you watched Saved by the Bell?
I've never seen so much as an episode. Okay. I just know Screech and how he's in jail or something for sure, right?
It's a show that sucks. But it sucks in a very comforting way. It's like a weighted blanket of shittiness. And when you're 12 or 8 or whatever watching it, felt good to watch it. But if you go back and watch it, it's a pretty holy shit, this is garbage type of deal. It's weird to have this concept be shot like single camera style with no laugh track.
Right.
Because it's so ingrained with just being a sitcom in my mind. But I think unless you're CBS, which like, I don't know how they can keep getting away with making shows with laugh tracks. They can't keep getting away with that. Unless you're CBS, you can't make a show with a laugh track.
You're fucking airing the ball right now. Is that the first time that's ever happened? Like a show has transitioned like that from being sitcom like that into a single camera show?
I want to say no, but I also can't think about the top of my head what it is.
Neither can I. That's
Fuller House is like a sitcom, right? Like they go over the top on that one, I think, still. Like cheese it up.
Mm-hmm. Shows that became single camera. That's a tough Google.
Well, I think there were some shows that started off as like sitcoms and kind of evolved. Like
over time. Well, I can't think of one that's left and then been revived as a totally different camera style, you know, or a totally different type of show.
I don't know. That's a tough
question, yeah.
I thought that the trailer was kind of like enjoyable, but ultimately I don't have room in my heart for like another teen dramedy type deal with tertiary characters that are like the ones that I point to, like Leo from the Hollywood meme, say I know those people.
Yeah.
The Zach Morris plot point, the fact that they kept that is still ridiculous.
Absurd way to go about this show.
Pass, won't be watching it. I can say that with very
well. I shut down the low income high schools because I'm Governor Zach Morris. And I'm gonna move how many students to this one high school? That's not a solution, Zach. We expect more from California Governor Zach Morris.
The governor.
He better have a sex scandal, dude.
There's a cool name in this, right? It's A.C. Slater, I think, right?
Yeah. Mario Lopez's character.
That's a fucking sick name. I like that name a lot.
Saved by the Bell had some good characters. It wasn't a good show. It was over the top. It was 90s. It was cheesy. It was fine for the time. It's like the like every other sitcom that was in the 90s that were enjoyable because that's what we liked at the time. But you go back and rewatch it, it's just they don't age well. Like they aged worse than the sitcoms of the 80s and the 70s.
Mm. Very good times.
But what was the name?
Kelly Kapowski? She Kelly that,
Kapowski.
Right?
Tiffany Amber Thiessen. Like, I mean, that whole the whole cast was – like, you know, we looked up to them when we were kids because they were the big kids.
They were cool. They had the cool
and
hair.
A lot of people, I'm not saying it was me, Tiffany Amber Thiessen was their first crush, and they had that one poster on their wall of her.
That's like the one, I think, cultural takeaway I know from it is the name A.C. Slater and then Kelly Kapowski, and that's it.
Because of A.C. Slatering, right? When you sit on a chair backwards?
No, that's what that's called?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a cop move.
I mean, it might be a cop move, but I still call it Slatering.
Interesting. That sounds like something that has a different meaning on Urban Dictionary.
Same when you poop that way, too. Like, if you're working on your laptop, put your laptop up on the shelf
on the tank.
Poop backwards.
Mm-hmm. Straddle the tank. I've done it many times.
There's a also Punky Brewster revival, the trailer for that. Peacock's going to lean very heavy into revivals. Very heavy.
Anything I want a small wonder Punky revival.
What is Punky Brewster? All I know is that you would call people Punky Brewster. I'm assuming the kid must be like an asshole or something, right?
I think she was like the rambunctious little child. Was she adopted, maybe? Maybe Damn. She was adopted into that family. I'm trying to fill in the blanks with a lot of these sitcoms. There are other ones like Silver Spoon sucked ass. Harry and the Hendersons sucked ass.
Oh, Harry and the Hendersons. I know that.
Small Wonder sucked ass. The only ones that I really enjoy are like Saved by the Bell. Fresh Prince. I think Fresh Prince actually is the best aged sitcom from the early 90s. Like, I'm talking early 90s because I think like Friends starts the mid 90s. Trend of sitcoms, but like Fresh Prince is the best one, and everything Start else that. Just kind of falls somewhere in line. And also like another mid-90s sitcom, like they figured out what they're doing in the mid-90s with Frasier. Frasier's good. Frasier's actually good.
Frasier, there's nothing wrong with saying Frasier's good.
Frasier's awesome.
Cheers was good too.
One thing CBS is not bringing back, and this is a tough subject for us. We were going to talk about it last week. We didn't really have, I think, the right headspace to discuss it. Is they canceled God Friended Me on CBS.
God damn it.
Which is tough.
I was an angel.
Which is tough. I don't really know what they're going to promote now during football.
Bob Hart Abishola.
Yeah, besides Bob Abishola, do they even have
shows? Bob Abishola.
Do they even have shows to promote? It's shocking. Ken Jack, do you want to say anything about God Friended Me? I know it's a show that you watched a lot. It meant a lot to you. You would often take like screenshots of the show and text them to us and like love the scene.
Yeah, I put together a list of the top five moments from God Friended Me. I know you guys didn't get a chance to catch up on the final season, so just putting this together for everyone. You can go back and watch it anytime you want on the CBS streaming app that everyone has. My number five moment, with the help of God, Miles finally reconciled with his uncle Terrence, who had been estranged from the family for over a decade. Really emotional moment. It was awesome. Number four moment, Kara discovered that Miles founded a group on Facebook called Da Sneet Sniffers, and it started a lot of drama between them. Number three, Rakesh saw that God posted a picture saying, share this meme with 10 people or your mom will fucking die, and he didn't share it. And then his mom was flattened by a dump truck. Number two moment, Miles meant to DM the Lord, dear God, please convince Kara to let me hit it raw, but he accidentally posted it as his status, and it became more trouble between him and Kara. And then number one was when God shared an anti-vaxxer meme. And that's all I have to say about God Friended Me.
Yeah, number one was like, that was a pretty shocking plot twist, so that's not too
it's fucking surprising crazy.
To have it there.
There's a lot going on in that show.
It's a good list. I mean, it's funny because like what was so complex about God Friended Me is that they would show this like happy-go-lucky show of a guy with a phone app and he get the friend request. But then you go in the show and it's much deeper than that.
Yeah, I mean, much more deeper, spiritual.
The thing is like most people when they're on Facebook, God doesn't friend them. But in this one, the main character got friended by God on Facebook.
Yeah. Incredible.
I don't know. People want these simpler fucking shows. They want the Tiger Kings documentaries. They want Love is Blind or whatever.
Young Sheldon's still around?
Yeah, which is that shows right there. That's a travesty. It's a fucking travesty.
They just got to get Chuck Lorre. Like all the CBS shows have to be done by Chuck Lorre, which Chuck Lorre is responsible for my favorite piece of trivia of all time.
Hit it.
Who wrote the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon theme song?
Who is it? Chuck Lorre.
Chuck Lorre.
Really?
Well, he is responsible for the worst finale moment in the history of television. By the way,
with Darman Gregg.
Have you ever watched the final, like, have you ever seen the final 5 minutes of the of Two and a Half Men, the last episode?
No.
It's the worst piece of TV I've ever seen in my life. Like, I watched that show a little bit when it first came out, like back when that kid was really young, and when Charlie Sheen was on and all that. But I didn't last that long. But I know it was a very beloved show. It was number one show on TV for a while. But the final 5 minutes of that show, I was talking about two of our coworkers, Nick and KB. We were talking about weird shows, and I went back and we were talking about the kid Angus T. Jones, and I went back and I looked up, like, I didn't realize he had left the show at one point, and he was in some like weird like cult almost. It was a weird story, but his character like went to the military and he comes back, and they did a very fourth wall breaking, self aware finale with like a fake Charlie Sheen, and it's the worst 5 minutes of TV I've ever seen in my life. It is so cringe inducing. I'll send it to you guys. It's worth a watch. Look it up. It's on YouTube. It's terrible.
Oh,
sure. There's some Two and a Half Men fan.
That show was awful all the way around. Like Big Bang Theory, I've defended. I can watch it as comfort food. I Two and a Half Men is unwatchable for me. Cause it's always like, it's always this dorky brother. It's like, Charlie, you left some juice out in the counter. And then Charlie saying something oh yeah, I did.
That was like
this lady.
That's an actual line from that show that I remember for some reason. Is Charlie says, "Hey, you left a ring with your juice box." He goes, "How can a box make a ring?"
Ugh.
I remember watching it it was like 2003-ish. That's when I remember watching that show. I don't remember much of the show at all. Just that was Charlie Sheen.
That show got billions of more views than fucking like Future Man. Isn't that great?
The other thing I remember about that show is Charlie's brother, played by who's that guy? Played Lex Luthor.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. Fan of the pod.
Franco Harris.
He had a fetish for pregnant women.
Did he?
Yeah. Oh. Not the actor, but in the show, the character.
Fuck, what's his name? Now it's bothering me. Because it's a name we should know. I could see it on the tip of my tongue.
His brother in the show? Who?
The other guy, the nerdy guy.
Basically the main character.
Oh, John Cryer?
Yeah, John Cryer.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like another brother you weren't saying John Cryer.
John Cryer's character, who basically is John from Garfield.
Yes.
Like Charlie's Garfield. Like, this is Garfield.
This is Garfield.
Two and a Half Men's Garfield.
The little kid is fucking Opie, or whatever his name is.
They think John Cryer and one of the men, and the other man, who's the new man who replaced Charlie Sheen, Ashton Kutcher, they think Charlie is coming back to kill them. And the whole thing ends is that Charlie, a fake Charlie, shows up at the door and gets crushed by like a falling piano or something. And then the last shot of the series is Chuck Lorre sitting in a chair, like sitting in a director's chair, and you see the set, and you saw that it was a set where the guy got hit with the piano, and he turns to the camera and he goes, "Winning." And then and then Chuck Lorre gets smashed by a piano as well.
That's meta.
It's tough. I mean, maybe it was funnier back then, but remembering the Winning Tiger Blood thing, like that, which was funny at the time, no matter how fucked up Charlie Sheen was. That actual scene, not funny. And I don't think that would have been funny back then. That's just lame.
Yeah, that's not funny, man. It's got the perfect theme song for syndication.
Man.
All of Chuck Lorre's show have like a very abbreviated, catchy theme song that always airs in full during syndication.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But then also,
that's the key.
Which is also still catchy when shortened, because all you would hear is "man," and then it would go right into the show.
Right.
Yeah. That's the key to a good theme. It can be 5 seconds or 2.5 minutes. All right. Let's talk about something a little more serious. And that is Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Pretty incredible movie. This movie comes from France. This was a movie that,
mon ami,
for a myriad of reasons, was not selected as France's pick for the Oscars. So as far as I know, I may be wrong. I looked it up. I could not find it. This movie will never get nominated for an Oscar. It missed its window because it was released in 2019.
I mean, Les Miserables was awesome, for whatever that's worth. I understand them wanting to pick that, but at the same time, like, Portrait of a Lady on Fire is definitely better.
It did not get selected for France. It did not represent France.
France actually submitted the movie American Gets Yelled At on the Champs-Élysées McDonald's
by a guy in a fucking black and white striped shirt.
Yeah,
horizontal striped shirt.
mime smoking on the underground.
It's all black and white. And then at the end, it just goes, c'est la vie. Cut. And it goes, Finn. It doesn't actually end. It goes, Finn.
Sorry.
Also, I want to note the struggle of this show, because there's a couple things that we're bad at on this show, and I'm very much a part of this. Anything that is biblical or mythical,
Greek,
yes,
very bad at that. You can tell by if you watch our Westworld reviews, where I have to take other people's breakdowns because I don't understand it. Name pronunciation, the other thing. Awful at it.
Oh yeah, enjoy these ones.
I'm gonna say Marianne, because that's just the easiest way to read it. I assume there should be some sort of way I say that. And then Eloise is what I'm gonna say for the other one. We're just gonna stay
that. Eloise is right.
That's correct, right?
The H is silent. Yeah.
It's still presented a challenge, and in terms of Greek mythology, I believe it's Orpheus and Eurydice. That I believe I'm correct as well. However, I double checked about 90 times because I think I'm actually maybe the worst at just awful at reading things. France, set in 1770. And this is period technically, and I want to get to that because somebody actually asked me a direct question, like, because everyone knows if you listen to this pod, I'm not a period person. I don't love period pieces. It really takes me out of it. Certain time periods, mostly this one, not my cup of tea. Didn't really matter for me here, which is kind of what I said with Little Women as well, and I'll explain why. France, 1770. Marianne, a painter, is commissioned to do the wedding portrait of Eloise, a young woman who has just left the convent. Eloise is a reluctant bride-to-be, and Marianne must paint her without her knowing. She observes her by day to paint her secretly. To kind of elaborate on that, she does not want to be a bride. The painting kind of signifies and brings her into that marriage, and there's only one way to really get this to work, and that is for Marianne to go in there and basically by memory learn her features, learn her face, learn her body, and paint her at night or when she's not there and not looking. And much more comes out of this. It's a romantic story. And this is spoilers, by the way, just a heads up, big time spoilers. If you haven't seen this movie, it's on Hulu. I'm going to wait right here. I don't want to cut this in extra. Spoilers. They fall in love. Like that's the big part of the movie. This is a pretty incredible movie. I will say that. I don't have any like real complaints. You know, if you don't remember, then I'll explain it. If I rate something a 95 or above, it's just great. And then it becomes, where does that fall in line with other movies that I have a 95 or above? This would be a 96 for me. Retroactively speaking, I'm going to put it on this year's scale. I'm going to put it in our 2020 movies, which may end up being like 8 movies. It'll be like number 1, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Number 2, Bad Boys for Life. well, it'd be Invisible Man, actually. This movie would have been number 3 for me from last year, behind Parasite and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It is incredible. And there was a review that I saw in the trailer for this movie that I thought put it in a perfect way. They said this is, yeah, it's a period, it's an older story, but it has a modern soul to it. This is very much a character story. There's so much character involved here. And what's so beautiful about it is, one, like visually speaking, it's just a gorgeous movie to look at. The way it's filmed, the way it's shot, the way it's presented. The color, it's just stunning. But also, the way that you can dive into the characters and the romance, and I know a lot of people have talked about the gaze, the male gaze, the female gaze in this movie, how people can establish a connection and how you as a viewer can look at love and romance without speaking, with just the way people look at each other and visual cues, it's just unbelievable. It's so well crafted, and we'll talk more about it. But the tone and the way this movie plays out is unlike anything I've seen recently. And it's awesome. This is such a good fucking movie. It lived up to the hype and more for me. I thought I was gonna like it. I didn't know if I was gonna love it. I ended up really loving it. So 96 out of 100 for me for Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Ken Jack, I think you saw this movie first, correct? Out of the three of us.
Yeah, I saw it. I don't know, some point over in the fall, I believe. We got that super secret screener. Now, this movie is a 93 out of 100 for me. I agree with a lot of the points you brought up. It's absolutely gorgeous movie, and I do think a lot of the characterization done in this movie is fantastic. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that so the director of this movie and the woman who plays Heloise, I believe, they dated in real life, I think, for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think that they have, like, she draws the director that is a really great performance out of her in the way that they're able to, like you said, like kind of give you cues of emotion, give you cues, like words without them actually talking to each other. I think that the way that they develop this relationship between these two women is just, it's really breathtaking to watch, because like, it's like, it's really, really difficult, I think, in movies when you're not talking, when you're not given that sort of, especially in Western movies, just out loud exposition and stuff, like to kind of connect with these characters. And you really do connect with them. You feel for both of their stories and where both of them are coming from. Even though this is a fucking 1700s period piece with about French women aristocracy living on a fucking island, like you shouldn't connect with this at all realistically or empathetic towards either of them, but you are. And I think that's just all due to the fantastic direction. Like you said, the cinematography in this is fucking fantastic. It's such an incredibly aesthetically pleasing movie. Like I would watch this movie completely on mute just to like this fucking background watch just helps you go to sleep. Like not go to sleep, but just feel relaxed.
There's a couple shots. Sorry awesome. To interrupt you. There's a couple shots that I would like make as my computer background.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the drawing sequences, the shots out of the cliff, it's all absolutely gorgeous. And it's definitely, if you want to consider it from a movie from last year, I would probably put it in the top 10 of my movies last year. It's easily, if you're considering it this year, this the best movie this year.
I give it a 95. I really enjoyed it. But so the director is Celine Sciamma. I'm going to pronounce it like that.
I'm going to say you're close on that.
That's why I said the director instead of trying to pronounce it.
I'm going to say you're close on that. So it's a slight applause.
Celine Sciamma and Naomi Merlant and Adele Hanel. I know I just butchered that last name. I want to try to say their name because, and also there was another cast member, Luana Bajrami, who was kind of the maid or the chamber maid or whatever it was called. This movie, so I think everybody past a certain age, if you're past 25, just say past 25, even younger than that, I'm sure you've been in love with somebody who you just couldn't be with. Or didn't work out, and you may look back on it. You may be in a better circumstance now, but you kind of look at it with, a nostalgia or rose-tinted glasses or whatever. And I thought this movie captured that singular feeling very well in terms of the arc of actually seeing the romance unfold to the reveal at the end, which I loved, of her seeing the painting of Eloise and her daughter with the book that was turned to page 28.
Mm-hmm.
And the context, you know, obviously like it wasn't subtle, right? So this isn't like, you know, a big reveal, but it was done in a way that like the context was that she drew herself on 28 of the book. So it was Eloise's way of kind of putting that nod to Marianne, who she still views this way, even though her life has moved on. And it gave you this sense of melancholic closure without actually having like what you consider to be a typical American happy ending. And then the other sub ending was obviously Marianne seeing her at the orchestra and kind of a very, I don't know, like just a very long, long shot of Eloise kind of breaking down in tears of just listening to the music. So kind of talking about the end, going back to the beginning, I think what made this so great was the chemistry that the two actresses had with each other. And just in terms of the way the relationship worked out with like just establishing Marianne as being an expert in her craft. And then I love the way they did it with the painting at the beginning and her like talking to a class, because it really established her character as kind of having I don't know if it's like a hard edge, but like, you know, typically in like romance movies, there's always like one character who's kind of like the softer one. And I thought these two were just like both very headstrong and strong characters. And they had this amazing chemistry with each other that popped off the screen. I loved it.
There's such an importance too. And you mentioned those final scenes of telling a movie and telling a story without needing to explain things. And this movie does a great job without explaining things, right? Because like, I feel like movies that can't land romance, right? They have to explain that page 28 thing, right? Where you get like narration or you get a character like, oh, what's page 28, right? Everything Damn. Was all through visual cues, was all the way people looked at each other, through music at the end, at the concert. And obviously the first of kind of the three-part ending where it references the Greek mythical story of Orpheus and Eurydice, where they turn around, or where she turns around and looks back at Eloise, which we'll get into because that's like the biggest audience question is kind of the ending of it. It's art. I think that's kind of the best way to put it. Like there's just sometimes you watch movies, we review things, and we see things like Mission Impossible Fallout, which is a fucking incredible movie. And I think about that as like this great cinematic experience. This one is just like, it's art. It's ironic because it's a movie about art in a sense. It's about painting, but there's just something different. It's just one of those ones that just sticks out and feels different than anything else you're watching because of that, because of the way it does play out.
And I think I want to say, and I don't know too much about it, but I want to say different cultures have different perspectives of love.
For sure.
In America, I think we're very focused on the one, like the one relationship that's going to end up being, you know, the up relationship, right? Where you basically die together of old age. I think other cultures, and maybe the French, at least just from like kind of watching this and like what this felt like an ode to, was, you know, rather than looking back at like prior relationships as, you know, the ones testing, that failed, yeah. Right? It still was like a wonderful experience. And even though it didn't have a great end and you couldn't be together and, you know, the hands of fate got in the way and you know, you're not going to have that the rest of your life and part of you is going to be sad. There still is a fondness. There still is some happiness that you can strain through that. And the end did a really good job of like, at least through all that sadness, having a glimmer of light pop up, having something that made you feel good about it with not like, you know, the two characters running towards each other at an airport, which is kind of what you feel like it would be like. They'd be like 1890 and they'd be a Charles de Gaulle, be 100 years later. I don't know how they lived, but you're not going to get that with the French movie. I don't think all the time you might in a romantic comedy. Again, I don't see a whole lot of French movies, but I do feel like from watching this, the depiction of love felt different than the way love is depicted in an American movie.
Definitely.
It's interesting.
Definitely less conventional than what we're used to. And I think that part of what you said is true, but mostly because like, they're not going to be the French anyway, people look back on a relationship and say like, oh, my ex was crazy. That's why we broke up. It's like, they look at it more like that shitty fucking Dr. Seuss quote, whatever. Like, look, be happy because it happened. Or like, smile because it happened. They're more about like that shared experience. And I think that that's, you know, in this movie anyway, a very beautiful thing and not something that they took very lightly.
Apparently, that's the way this played out for people in France. It's like kind of a reason why it didn't catch on as much as it caught on elsewhere. Like, it didn't turn people on enough. I think that's what the director said. There's no nudity in this movie. There's a lot of passionate love, but there's no nudity. It's rather tame.
A little bit of nudity.
Maybe a touch.
But it's not. It's not sexualized.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
It's like I think it's something like
love making, not fucking.
Blue is the warmest color with Léa Seydoux, right? There was another French movie that got most of the headlines that got. Like, and I think that like movie that had its own merits to it. But I think the movie was lost in the headlines of the sex scenes being so uncomfortable for the lead actresses and simulated to the breaking point of like they almost didn't feel simulated anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when things are overly sexualized, it kind of takes away from the movie itself.
It's like that. What was the Eva Green movie where they did that? The French movie with the American in it. I don't know. It was like her big role where the big thing was that there was a simulated sex scene that was quote unquote real. And I know people freaked out about that. I forget the name of it offhand, but so another French movie though. Eva Green, people very horny for her.
That's very true.
A lot of people are saying 300 Rise of an Empire was very gratuitous, but not Ken Jack.
Yeah, no, I would never. Absolutely never.
The performances are also really good too.
I think The Dreamers is what you're thinking about.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
This is a physical. These are physical performances in a different way. You know, not stunts and flying out of airplanes. Again, it's this movie doesn't work if both actresses, and I absolutely cannot pronounce their names. And I'm not going to offend their names by trying to butcher them. So I'm just going to say they're both fantastic. But this is the movie where if this, again, I'll use the word subtlety. The subtlety is in the way they look at each other, whether it's across the fire, whether on the beach. If they don't nail those, this does not work whatsoever. It's a very quiet movie. Like, there's a lot of space in between dialogue. And there's a lot of tone and moments set, again, just by the look of them looking at each other or looking elsewhere or looking at the painting. And if they don't nail that, and they nail their lines, right? Everything's delivered with passion and emotion. But if they don't nail that stuff, the physical things, the facial expressions, this movie doesn't work, plain and simple, because it relies so much on that. It's the most pivotal part of the movie, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Entirely dependent on them being able to convey emotion, convey thoughts and feelings through facial expressions and through the way they present themselves physically.
Just God, the way some of the things are. One of the ones I love, like when she's painting and they're on the beach, or they're on the beach talking, she's observing, and she sees the way her hands are one over the other on her lap. And we go back in, we see that she's done a lot of the painting, head down to maybe like the midsection, and then nothing. And then the next thing she's painted is a big empty space. It's her hands, again, on the beach. It was the latest thing she does observe, the latest thing that kind of made note to her during their conversations. And then when she walks into the room, we see her walk into the room just below the waist, her feet through a mirror as she's on the other side, as Marianne's on the other side, trying to hide the paintings and hide what's going on. Everything's just, it's one of those movies. I felt the same way about, and I hate saying this because it's a foreign movie and I'm not just trying to make that comp, but it's with Parasite as well, where you see something that you're not expecting and you're like, wow, like, this is why I go and see movies. This is why I watch things, because it's just so different. Mm-hmm. It just separates from everything else that I've seen, even things that I like a lot.
And I also think there are a lot of, I just want to say, like, I think there's a lot of themes in this movie that we just aren't qualified to talk about. Like, yes. I can't convey my experiences in terms of, you know, the relationship in this movie. And then also I think it deals with the issues of like agency and power in terms of like, you know, the time period and women and kind of what marriage meant and all that. I especially loved the dynamic where they were talking about it. And, you know, one kind of had the option to inherit her father's business. And then the other one, who was basically a more privileged member of society, still didn't have the agency herself to do anything but be intertwined in this preordained marriage she didn't want to be a part of. But I can't comment on that because I don't have that experience, but I appreciate the context in terms of the movie.
A couple people have noted this in our replies to like questions, a couple on Twitter through our Reddit that the director as well. I think, are we going with Siama?
Sure.
That how we say it? Trill, can you make the we're going to say her name, last name is Siama.
I just said Siama.
Okay. Noted that it was a story. And obviously it's a lesbian relationship told from the perspective and told from the eyes of a female. And so it's different. And true, you brought up like Blue is the Warmest Color is another one. And that's why, again, it's a movie that feels different and sounds and looks different than anything that we've seen in terms of subject matter like this. It sticks
way more
out.
Authentic.
The big question here, we've had a couple people ask us, including the person who I just said put this at our Reddit, Harry's Hotter Dad is his name. Good handle. A couple other people on Twitter asked us as well, do you think at the end of the movie, she knew that, or Eloise knew that Marianne was there? Do you think they both knew? Do you think they went in knowing that they were both going to be there? That's kind of like the big question, because it's not like ambiguous, right? Where she's about to turn and look, but you get the sense they both knew they were there, because that's what you kind of get with the painting, right? With the page 28, that's a nod to like, I know she's going to see this at some point, and this is my hello to her. Does she know that the song lines up? It's the same song you heard from earlier on in the movie. They talk about music, they talk about orchestras and stuff. Do you think she knew she was there? And we'll talk about I want to ask this question first before I get into the tie-in with Orpheus and Eurydice.
So, I mean, Marianne knew Eloise was there.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. So, do you think she knew going in? Do you think the other way around knew she was there at all?
I don't know. I almost don't want to interpret it because it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Right. Like it's just, I like, if I had to make an interpretation, I'd probably say no, because at least them acknowledging it would be some further sense of closure. Whereas like them just kind of being in the same place and one knowing it and the other one not knowing it does kind of have more of like a, yeah, this makes sense because this is essentially how a relationship is, sort of tilt to it. But ultimately, you know, it's not going to lead to anything. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't matter, but it's a good question.
Yeah, I prefer it left unsaid as well. I don't think it's something that requires explaining, although it is, if we had to answer one of the moments, I think that having more exposition would have been helpful.
I want to relate this to the Orpheus and Eurydice thing. So when they're reading, they're discussing the story about how it's a Greek mythical story, how Orpheus is told that he's able to leave with the one he loves, Eurydice, so long as he does not look at her. And he turns around and he does look. And the debate they have is it that he can't resist looking at her and he makes a choice. He chooses the memory of her. But then Eloise throws out the idea that, I believe Eloise threw it out, I may be mixing up who said what, but throws out the idea that maybe perhaps Eurydice told him to look, told him to turn around. And it's foreshadowing, and it's great foreshadowing, and it's baked into the movie in a great way, because it's a really passionate discussion. It's one of the, I guess, quote-unquote, louder moments, too, where they really show their emotion, as opposed to it just through kind of quieter conversations, the way they look at each other. But at the end of the movie, this is kind of the first of the three-part ending, as Marianna is crying and running out and leaving because she's upset she has to leave someone that she's had this romantic connection with, Eloise says, turn around, and Marianne turns around. But again, you're left with that kind of debate in your head. And that's, I guess, the other big question is it, in that case, Eurydice, who is Eloise telling Marianne to turn around, or is it Marianne choosing to stay with the memory? Because again, that mythical story is that he went with the memory, even though he knew that if he turned around, he would lose the one he loved forever. And this was linked to us. This is from a movie read, I'd imagine, r/movies. Hong Celeste is the person who wrote this. Says, I do think they both knew each other, were there at the concert. Eloise's interpretation of the Eurydice story was that she was the one to say turn around, which she did. She said turn around to Marianne, and she made the lover's choice, while Marianne made the poet's choice. She turned around and saw her in the wedding dress. As someone who made the lover's choice, the Eurydice story, she shouldn't and wouldn't turn around, so that she will keep her lover's memory in heart and always feel their presence. It's an interesting way to look at it, where you have to decide, like, I guess that's the debate. And again, that's the ambiguous part, is who made the choice there, right? Like, and right. I think that's what kind of makes it such a beautiful story, is that there is no way of knowing. The director doesn't want you to know. She doesn't even want to comment on it, which I love when a director won't comment on it. That's why, like, Christopher Nolan broke about Inception for so many years. He's like, stop fucking asking me. Like, you're missing the point of my movie. the point is, you're supposed to either draw your own conclusion or just accept the fact that, like, he's moved on. It's not important anymore.
Chris, did the totem fall? I'm here promoting Tenet.
Idiot. He will get that question if there's a Tenet press tour. I like that it's left that way. And she spoke on that. Like, look, it's up for the person to decide who did make the choice, because it was such an important debate in the movie. And it was the symbolic ending as a part of kind of the grander scheme of things. That tied it up. Look, if the ending had just been kind of one of those three, that's great. But the turning around is like, that's kind of the aha moment where you're like, that was fucking awesome. Like, what a way to tie the story up. What a way to wrap it up. Even if you would have just gotten one of those three endings, it would have still been great. But it was kind of done with great craft, I would say. Because that is the flashback ending, which is the larger chunk of the movie. And then you kind of get the, I guess, quote unquote, present day, or closer to present day endings when she's telling the story in her art class.
I loved it. And I mean, you talked a little bit about the time period. Like, Victorian England is one of my least favorite settings, but this, like, I love, like, I'm a little bit of a Francophile, fellas. I love the French stuff. I love that time period in France. It's just the elegance, the drape, the flow of the fabric on that green dress was exquisite.
Well, it's also not a story about the period, right? You can tell this story.
It's like
now.
A Little Women in that sense.
Exactly. And that's why somebody tweeted at me, and I'm going to get the name. And this is, I was glad they asked this, because it's a fair question, because I've said it before. It is at Pin, P-I-N-N, 40. He said, like, how do I feel about this? Because I've often said I don't like the period stuff. Little Women did a great job of that as well, because Little Women was much more about the character, and it didn't really have much to do about the period itself. It could have been a story told at any moment. When a movie's just about the period, I'm out. Like, I'm going to watch it because I just watch everything, but not my thing. This was just a story about character, and I'm a sucker for character stories like that. So, yeah, I agree completely, true.
It's timeless. It's a timeless thing. It's not about the period, which is like, what was the movie Mary Queen of Scots that we saw? That one.
Yes.
That one that felt like they leaned so hard into it being a period piece and not so much on the story and making it more relevant and digestible for like a more modern audience, which is like, fine, it's a real story, blah, blah, blah. You're not trying to make it something like a timeless epic or whatever. And like, but at the same time, if you're telling a story set in a period, it's pretty much like paramount to make sure that whatever it is you're telling is something that like a new modern audience is going to find interesting if they're not just a fucking Francophile like Trill. Like, if you're just a regular dude that likes good stories, regardless of where they're set.
Yep. That's true. This truly is timeless. And I hope more and more people watch it, because it is, it's a special movie.
I just can't wait until all this is over and I'm back in my favorite city in the world, the City of Lights, Paris, France, at the Paris Hotel and Casino on the Las Vegas Strip, enjoying a Starbucks from the We Proudly Brew Starbucks coffee stand. Not a real Starbucks. They're just the We Proudly Brew one.
That's the worst. That's just the absolute worst. You just know it's K cups. That's the worst.
Yeah, this is great. I love this, and I know there's some things that we will call gassy farts, and I do think that there are a lot of movies that are big gassy farts, and I think that you may have some trepidation heading into this one, because I mean, like, you know, we make fun of stuff with like period piece and whatever, but this is not that, Chief. Jump right in. Don't feel like this is something that's going to be,
this is like quarantine. Throw it up on your TV on mute because it looks so beautiful.
Yeah. It's just very good. Just good cinema. This is cinema. This is like Scorsese was saying, it's a cinema.
Fellas, baby.
Was this filmed in a certain way? I'm really bad with that type of thing. Was this like a certain camera? I'm really bad at that. Like, cause I feel like it looked different.
Was it done on like film rather than digital, or?
It was, oh, here we go. This is from creativeplanetnetwork.com. John Fowler at Film and Digital Times notes that the project is a portrait in large format cinematography. Filmed in 8K. There you go.
Damn.
Okay. Well, so the opposite of on film.
It's just like the literal opposite end of the spectrum.
We're movie guys.
I promised for us to stay in the lane of being your average movie boys. I won't become an expert.
That was a heat check by us, I think, for a second.
Yeah. You know, we were like,
we're reviewing a very fancy movie. We did a little bit too high of a heat check.
Getting too lost in the sauce.
Released by the same studio in the United States that released Parasite, by the way, Neon.
Neon rules.
Yeah.
I bought their Parasite shirt. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Also, there's
stuff.
Not to break our contracts with Disney and Netflix, there's a lot of good stuff on Hulu that's just hidden by their shitty interface.
Yes, it's true. Like, it's so frustrating.
I was looking at the You May Also Like movies down below, and a lot of these look interesting. Like, I Tonya is on Hulu. I would never have known that.
Fucking, that's the most frustrating thing, is whenever I do like the streaming blogs about whatever is on each platform, going through Hulu's interface is the biggest pain in the ass.
Because they always promote their shitty in-house shows.
Exactly.
Future Man was great, but like, if they had more of a square thing that was like a cascade, like the Netflix, where you could see more stuff rather than one thing at a time. Like, they always recommend Brooklyn Nine-Nine to me on this. I am not going to, like, I know people who like that show. I'm not going to watch it. I'm not going to do it just because Hulu's recommended it to me so much.
I've been doing three of these now. These, like, just my 10 picks. I've been going down my list because people always ask to see my list. I'm sorry I haven't uploaded it. I don't know. I don't know, whatever. But I go through my list of movies, my top movies. There are so many fucking good movies that you just cannot stream anywhere. It blows. Like, so many. Like, I'd say out of every five movies I pick to get on my list, I find one on streaming and I have to find more. Stinks.
Oh, you know what I watched yesterday? Phantom of the Opera. What a great song.
The Phantom of the Opera.
That one, the Gerard Butler one. In
dreams he sang to me.
It's such a great theme, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a classic.
Fire theme song.
Oh, stranger man. Than you dreamt of. Doo-doo.
It's so great.
You guys want to play the box office game?
Oh, we're doing Kevin Bacon, right?
We're doing Kevin Bacon. So we did a live watch of Tremors. We had a really fun live watch of Tremors the other night. That was one of my favorite ones yet. That was like just a straight up so movie funny. Commentary last night. Not that the other ones haven't been fun, but that was a really funny one. There were some moments in that. The moment of Tremors is one of the characters after escaping the tremor was eating, as our good friend Tyler Trewithers noted, an LT. It was a white bread with lettuce and grape tomatoes. It was just an old classic LT sandwich.
Solid move.
But Kevin Bacon, obviously, in it. So we're going to do Kevin Bacon's filmography for box office game. Top five highest grossing movies from Kevin Bacon.
X-Men First Class, first pick.
That's fair.
Drew, disagreements?
I'm with that. I'm still pulling up the filmography. I'm still pulling up the Baconator.
You're going to get... Are you going to guess that, though?
Yeah, do it.
Let's go.
Yeah, that is it's number two. That's number two.
Number two.
Good start.
It was in Patriots Day. Did that make a lot of money? Didn't we talk? Let's see what else is
I wonder
there.
If Hollow Man made money. Probably. Let's go Hollow Man.
No, dude, Apollo 13 is number one for sure.
Oh, yeah. Apollo 13. Yes.
Apollo 13, number one by only $2 million. I mean, $2 million more than First Class. You guys are two for
Damn.
Two.
Damn. Balto? Balto's animated. He played Balto.
Flatliners. No Flatliners.
No fucking way.
Dude, I don't know. Hold on. Because he was in Footloose.
Is that
too.
My daughter in there?
I mean, Footloose is pretty big, but the thing is, it's so old that I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's too old.
You know what?
R.I.P.D.?
No. A Few Good Men. A Few Good Men. I'm guessing okay, A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men's number three. A Few Good Men's number three. Yes.
Maybe Mystic River.
Skip? My Dog Skip. No, I'm just kidding. It's not My Dog Skip.
What about R.I.P.D.?
Was he in R.I.P.D.?
Yeah, I guess so. Shit, I don't remember him.
He was in R.I.P.D.?
You know what movie I really like is Frost Nixon.
Yeah.
Frost Nixon is one of my favorite. Oh, man. It is so fucking good. That's an all-time Sam Rockwell role.
Oh, yeah. Cave Dwelling Loverboy, Death Sentence. Any other animated movies? Because I still think Balto might be up there, but I'm not sure.
Let's do Balto. Let's guess Balto.
Balto's your guess?
Sure.
Wait. No. The wage just spreads out.
You guessed. That's a guess.
That's
got to
count. Balto might be like 35. I'm not even going to count. It made $11 million.
How?
Fuck.
Everyone knows Balto.
That's oh, man. True. I think you said Hollow Man. I do think we should guess that.
Let's do it. Hollow Man.
27, 28, 29, 30, 31. Okay, it's actually 35, Balto. I had to count. Hollow Man, your guess? That's number five.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So you're correct. You have two guesses to get the last one, which is number four.
I think Mystic River is going to be up there. Mystic River is definitely going to be up there, dude. It had such a good ensemble cast.
Because you're missing a huge one, and I this is before you're born. But the reason I guessed A Few Good Men is because it was a huge movie. The huge movie, like Oliver Stone, was on a roll in the early '90s, and one of the movies that came out was JFK. And JFK was a gigantic fucking deal when it came out.
I remember
this,
that.
This was Square. This is Square with like, 40-year-olds, like, having the JFK assassination happening in their kid. Now they're wanting to watch this movie. So I think it's JFK. I'm going to call my shot. If it's not JFK, we lose both of our guesses. This is how confident I am in JFK.
Okay, let's roll.
My fellow Americans, I was trying to do JFK. I can't do the Boston thing.
My fellow Americans,
some chowder. Do ask not what this movie can do for you.
Ask not. When I ran for school president, I actually used that speech. And I won. So fuck all you guys for making fun of me in your
ass. Ass not if you want Andy
you're calling
Andy Capp's hot fries in the vending machine.
I'll say this. If you get this right, you get two guesses next time. But if you miss it, you're done.
Okay.
You two. You get an extra guess next time. You get four guesses. Fucking
miss. I'm not going to miss. You don't miss.
It's JFK.
Thank you.
It's JFK. It was ballsy enough where I'll give it to you. I'll tell you. You know what? Mystic River was number 7, by the way. So you were right. Wow. It's definitely up there. You know what? I'm surprised you guys actually didn't guess. I'm surprised no one said Black Mass because Johnny Depp's in it. I thought you would probably.
Johnny Depp was in it, but it stunk.
I thought that was disappointing.
It was.
Yeah, I thought that bombed at the box office.
I had somebody in my office tell everyone that they're like, you got to see this new Matt Damon movie because they didn't know it was Jesse Plemons. It's like, I let them go on because I'm an asshole. I'm like, by the way, it's not Matt Damon. It's totally run a lie. It's false. Footloose May is like number 12, by the way.
Not bad, all things considered.
You guys win again. You're now 28-7.
What was that movie where he was like trying to avenge his dead family or something? Fuck, it was really good. Oh, it was Death Sentence.
Kevin Bacon?
Yeah, it was Death Sentence. It was awesome. And he also had like, I think it was The Following, the TV show. That was really good too. I like Kevin Bacon. He's a good dude. Very funny American Dad episode where Roger wears the Kevin Bacon nose. Because he doesn't have a nose and he commits a bunch of crimes and gets Kevin Bacon arrested. It's a very funny episode.
Do we want to do top 5 store smells to round this out?
Let's roll.
Okay, top 5 store smells. Who went? I think Ken Jack, you went first last time or you went third?
I don't remember.
All right, well, Trill, you go first, then I'll go, then Ken Jack, then the audience. Not a draft, just your top 5. It's your top 5. Top 5 best store smell. Not distinct. Best. Trill, number 5.
Number 5 is Costco. You're walking right in. You catch that tire rubber. You catch the hot dog air, and then you move to the back of the store, and you get just the random cold air smell of a bunch of mixed up products, but it somehow smells good. It smells fresh. It smells fresh in Costco. I mean, you get everything in Costco.
That Kirk shot
literally air. And nasally.
Mm-hmm.
Say Kirk shot air.
Get that Kirk shot.
I wish
in the free samples.
I wish you could tell them if someone like asked their R&D department, like, hey, who does the smell in the store? Oh, we call it Kirk shot air. It's in five corners of
every 30 minutes. It just spews out of the things at the top of the ceiling. It just goes.
My number 5, I think if you can take over, there's two mall places on my list. If you can take over a mall, that's a very distinct smell, but it's also good when it's a great smell. And that's Auntie or Auntie Anne's, depending on how you say it. That's my number 5. It is you basically cartoon wolf your way over there when you smell that shit in a mall.
And I think, you know, when I become president of the Mall Association of America in 5 years, It's gonna be unpopular, but I'm banning the roasted German nuts because that overpowers the Auntie Anne smell.
I don't think I've ever seen that before.
It's not as good.
Wait, the what?
Roasted German nuts?
You know they like the roasted nuts, the roasted almond stands.
Yeah, I can't think of seeing them in malls, but I know because like we have those nuts for nuts stands in New York, which smell amazing.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah, but if
honey you're roasted, in
the
mall, baby,
I want to smell the pretzel. I want the pretz shot air.
Pretz shot. Auntie Anne's back shot air.
Yeah, it's delicious and nothing like going to Auntie Anne's
and
getting the pretzels and then still getting the free sample when you walk away, like your pretzel in hand. And they got that little silver tray, and you're like, "I'm still gonna take it. I'm gonna take the free sample anyway. It's just too delicious to pass up."
My wife likes to get the pretzel bites. I don't like that. Get the whole pretzel.
So it's a mood thing for me. It depends on if I have a lot of shit in my hand. If I get it's a Christmas thing. It's a Christmas shopping thing. If I got a lot of things in my hand, I'll get the bites. I can hold the container. If not, I'm just going the pretzel. You think you get more with the bites or the pretzel?
I think flavor on the bites is actually better only because everything's condensed, you know?
Yeah, but I like the tactile pretzel experience of the actual pretzel.
Somebody listening has definitely worked at an Auntie Anne's before. Is there more pretzel in the bites or in, because some places do like the strips or the bites. I forget. Some places have like the pretzel strips or bites, depending on who you go to. Like I know Wetzel's Pretzels is another one. Philadelphia Pretzel Company, sure, but that's like a different world, that pretzel. Ken Jack, number five.
My number five is Target. I was just there earlier today. Mm-hmm. Kind of a sucky experience because you had to wait in the lines again, but whatever. I got my Legos and got out. It's just something about that smell, man. Everything smells the same no matter what section you're in. You're in pantry, you're in adult clothes, you're in Lego aisle. It doesn't matter. Like everything just has that very distinct Target smell that they just pump in through the rafters, and it just makes you want to buy shit you don't need unnecessarily. Yeah. And it's addicting. It makes you want to go back.
It always lowers your blood pressure. Like when you walk into Target, you're like, okay, I'm comforted a little bit. I'm ready to drop $200 on some Chip and Joanna Gaines planners.
There's CBD oil coming in through the vents or something. Cause you go in and right when you start, you're like, all right, especially nowadays, like you just want to get everything and sprint straight out. And I was like, oh, I'm going to take my time. Going to walk through, maybe buy, like you said, this planter or this emoji pillow. Who knows? They had a lot of Fortnite pillows there.
I bet they did. I bet the game memorabilia industry is fucking getting hit right now.
Tell you what, there's something I don't want to buy in this period because I'm afraid people are touching shit, and it's fucking pillows. Like, yes. I don't want to go and buy a pillow off a stand at Target.
Yeah, sleepies. Yeah. Sleepies and mattress firm probably not doing too well now. Well,
drugs are still doing fine, so they're okay.
I have a quarantine area of my house, like a quarantine area of the quarantine area that I put products I buy into for 3 days and just let them
marinate. 3 day quarantine your buys?
Sometimes. Why not just clean it with like a cloth?
Your wife's like past the milk. Yeah, why is it rotten and warm?
If it's not like, if I can wipe it down, I wipe it down, but I'm just talking about I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I have like a vestibule in my apartment, and we got dog food, and Petco delivered some dog food. Got some nice dog food, by the way. Merrick, little plates, it's called. It seems like quality stuff. I left it in there until I needed it, because what's the point in ripping open those boxes? Audience number five is hardware stores. I'm not going to touch on this because I know they're going to be on our list. So I'm just, there were so many Ace. Helpful place with the hardware folks. Ace is the place with the helpful hardware folks.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware folks.
Yeah. Ace is the place with the helpful hardware folks.
Ace, Lowe's, Home Depot.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware folks.
Trill, number four, best store smell.
Number four for me is Best Buy. I don't know what it is about Best Buy. I don't know what makes up that smell. Like maybe it's just the internals of electronic devices being spewed out, like the silicon air being spewed out of fans. Maybe it's a combination of all the cardboard or the casings for DVDs. Maybe it's all that stuff comes together. But when you walk into Best Buy, it doesn't have the relaxing effect that a Target does. It doesn't have that soothing, like, I'm cool with spending my money now. But like, it does get you in that mode to like, leave with something. I may not drop $1,200 on this Vizio today. or what's their house label? Ovation.
Yes.
Like a nice Ovation
speaker,
$40 plated gold plated cable. But I might leave with another fucking Apple charger.
They just have like a human centipede of Geek Squad guys farting into the ventilation.
How many times?
Going out to fix stuff.
Yep, the Geek Squad, the Geek Squad, they're not geeky enough. They get regular people now. I feel like there's a time when they're really geeky.
Is there more of a brand explosion than going into a Best Buy and cracking open a cold Aquafina from one of their fridges? You're about to,
a cold Aquafina is impossible.
They're always room temp.
their like drinks and those fridges at Best Buy are the coldest drinks in the world, I'm convinced.
Except for the Aquafina, that's it.
They're 33 degrees.
I used to love, like, speaking back to your NCAA, like, I remember multiple times walking into Best Buy on a game release day and grabbing it off the front table. When they used to put the games out in the front table on like release day. I remember getting the Tim Tebow NCAA football off of a table at Best Buy. Like on release night, it was awesome.
I'd get the strategy guide too, so I could see all the facts about the teams.
Oof. Did you not have the internet?
I mean, this was before like the iPhone, where I had
stats got created. Yeah,
Well, how do you? I mean, come on.
No, I get it. Like, strategy guides are cool.
You got good, got good scouting reports. I forget who was on the cover for the one that I got, though.
Now, I mean, I guess you'd rather want a professional strategy guide than trust GameFAQs.com, because they all, like, sometimes they can get a little weird, have a little commentary in there. And it turns out, like, Sonic Fox 69's writing it. He's getting a little horny in your walkthrough of Final Fantasy VII. Mm-hmm. I don't like that shit.
I remember once me and my brother, we walked to Best Buy to buy this game, Turning Point, something of war, this alternate history game where the Nazis took over America and you're like in a resistance. And we were so pumped for this game. And we walked all the way there. We had $65 in cash on us. We tried to buy the game. It was $65.05. And the lady wouldn't let us slide by on the first side. So we had to walk all the way back, get a nickel, come back, pay for it, and leave. And it was the worst game I've ever played in my life. Like, one, like, bottom five game I've ever played. It was not complete. The game, like, the gun game just did not work. It was incredible. Bad Best Buy experience.
Fucking Best Buy. Best Buy with an all-time bad return policy, too. I think it's been changed over the years, but one of the worst return policies in all of business.
Well, they changed their floor size, right? So, obviously, the Best Buys of the 90s were just gigantic. Just gigantic. Because, you know, they had all the physical media in the middle. You had the VHS tapes, mm-hmm. the CDs, video games, all that stuff. That stuff started shrinking. So, like, Best Buys they put up now are small, relatively speaking. But if you ever go back into a 90s vintage Best Buy, it is an incredible experience. It's kind of empty because they moved all the CDs out, but it's still fun. You can tell the difference.
Well, now you also have to, you're like, am I talking to a Best Buy employee or am I talking to a Samsung employee? Am I talking like it's confusing. Yeah, right.
I'm a subcontractor of Best Buy. Now I also work for Blackwater.
I wonder if they ever fought.
My number four is another brick and mortar place. That's Barnes & Noble. Barnes has a great smell.
So good.
Barnes has, and then you get the Barnes with like the actual Starbucks inside too.
Yeah.
You get the crisp pages.
Folks, it's better than a library. Like, I hate to say it, but it is. It's better than a library.
100%.
Like, a library, I think, is more important to society, but a Barnes & Noble smells better than a library.
Correct. It does. Oh, everyone wants to be in a Barnes & Noble. No one wants to be in a library. Everyone there doesn't want to be there.
There's a greater smell, and then there are sub-smells, and they all work together. There's the magazine smell. There's the book smell. I don't know. I actually don't know what the visual media smell is. I never really ventured over there. Not as good.
They also have like the early 2000s decor. Like, they just haven't bothered renovating the visual media smell because they don't
beige wall walnut panel.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing with it yet.
Mm-hmm.
There is a smell. What's a triumvirate? Is that how you say it? Triumvirate.
Triumvirate.
In Austin, Triumph. Texas, in the Arboretum in Austin, Texas, it is a cheesecake factory, and wall to wall next door is a GameStop that is connected to open door a Barnes & Noble. That is like that's a three-way smell explosion.
My hometown Barnes & Noble was next to a Payless and a Radio Shack, not nearly this same thing. But shout out to the Bayshore Shopping Outlet.
Mine was next to a marble slab creamery in Cedar Park, Texas.
There used to be a Borders across from the Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg. It talk about a murderer's row of a 90s shopping center. The shopping center had Borders, Nordstrom Rack, which is still relevant, Old Navy, had a sporting goods store. I don't think it was Sports Authority. I think it was Sports Mart at the time. Maybe it wasn't a sporting goods store. But then you know what the restaurants were? California Pizza Kitchen out front, and then it probably still there, but Shalotsky's. It's just great. Oh, just great.
Fucking Shalotsky's.
Shalotsky's is like it's a weird sandwich. We'll have to send you a picture with the bird. It's all about the bread. It's a good sandwich place.
Shalotsky.
The last Borders I went into was actually across from a California Pizza Kitchen as well, in the Domain in Austin. It's now
is this a sandwich on a biscuit?
No, but it's a different bread. They replaced the Borders with it's called like Our House. It's like a fucking furniture store. Lame as shit. It's next to Gloria Stefan's Latin Cuisine restaurant.
Is in the middle of the street?
What, the Borders?
Our House.
No, the Our House.
In the middle.
That was good. That was good. I'm bummed I didn't get that. That sucks. That sucks. I didn't get that off the top.
Oh, but see, I've been to the domain. Myself. I've been to the domain, though, and the big retail news today, Neiman Marcus may file for bankruptcy.
Oh, wow.
And that doesn't mean that store will be out, but that will be – it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Real ones know what you call Neiman Marcus. What's the nickname for Neiman Marcus?
Needless markup.
Let's go. Real ones know. All right. This is going to be a 10-hour segment. Ken Jack, number four.
My number four is the Apple Store. The Apple Store, they just pump in straight up fresh oxygen. Like, you cannot convince me that, like, if you lit a flame in that fucking Apple Store, that it wouldn't explode.
Oh, shit, he froze. He's so...
I can still hear you.
Oh, he's back. He's back. Okay, he was so amped. Yeah, continue.
Okay, but I was just saying, if you were to light a flame in that place, it would explode. The air is just way too fresh. Like, you walk in, and it feels like you've never actually breathed oxygen in your entire life. Like, you've never actually had a breath of air. Because it is so fresh, so good. I never end up buying anything unless it's, like, one thing I specifically go there to buy. But I do love that smell so much.
It is really good. It's very good. I almost put Apple Store on mine. It's just like Tim Cook, like, had a bowl with a wooden spoon and crafted this, like, smell. Mm-hmm. Apple Stores do have a nice smell. That's probably why Microsoft stores aren't as successful. They don't have the smell down.
I don't think I've ever been to a Microsoft store, to be honest.
There's a Microsoft that. Store in between where Borders it used to be in the California Pizza Kitchen.
The Microsoft store is better, in my opinion. Not for buying stuff, but it's a better experience because they have Xboxes and they have VR things, and you actually can do stuff in there. Whereas in Apple Store, they'd be like, okay, now it's time for like a robot dog demonstration every 30 minutes, or they get the shitty $79 robot dog and control it with the iPad.
You know what was really cool at Best Buy that I thought was the coolest thing as a kid but never used as an adult was game demos? Like just walking up and just hogging the game demo thing for 20 minutes like an asshole playing a game that you'll never buy?
I like, there's got to be, now I'm going to go look at it, but like there's got to be a dude or a dudette who collects the old like game demo displays. You know, just that had like the PS2 in the glass.
Yeah, and the little astronaut bubble.
Yeah, the reset button on the outside.
Yeah.
There's got to be someone who collects all those. The N64 one was pretty cool, as I remember.
And the controller's on like a steel cord.
Yeah. That, what are they, you know those, it's like a thing, but it's wrapped in that rubber that's like an accordion looking thing.
Yeah, shit. I don't know what it's called.
Name,
but
there's got to be a product name for that.
Oh, dude. I'm sending you a picture. The PlayStation 1 was so cool.
Audience number four was Foot Locker. Foot Locker's got a very distinct smell. It's got that sneaker smell.
Oh.
That new shoe smell.
God.
But
it doesn't hit the same nowadays either because I don't feel like they manufacture shoes with the same materials. But every now and then you'll get a pair of shoes that smell like shoes used to smell.
Yeah. Okay, Trill, number three.
Number three for me is on that same vein. It's a smaller sporting goods store. And the reason I say that is smaller space, you get the sneaker smell, but you get the smell of everything else. Like an MC Sports of yore. But like the bigger chain sporting goods stores, they don't smell the same. They smell good, but like I miss the smelling the Wilson A200 gloves on the wall and the everything in there and the rubber and the shoes. It's just so good.
Yeah. A store that is much more focused on the goods than clothing, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The clothes take in all the good smells.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's a fact.
It's like an air filter.
Yeah.
And the Dick's, I like the only game in town, but they're too big. I miss being in the...
No,
like the
Dick's has no smell. I was thinking about... going through... Again, I was just using a blueprint of looking at the map of Austin. Domain was one of them. And I looked at Dick's, and I'm like, I don't think Dick's has a... Sports Authority I can smell in my head. I can smell Sports Authority a little bit back in the day. Sporting Goods, no smell.
Sports Authority was great. Great smell.
And Sports Mart was even better because Sports Mart was even more of a dungeon. And the most legendary sporting goods store of all time is the Sports Mart in Chicago, right by the Rock and Roll McDonald's.
I don't think I've ever been to Sports Mart.
Which is gone now, right? That Rock and Roll McDonald's is gone.
Both are gone. I mean, both are gone, obviously. But this was like an 8-story Sports Mart overlooking the Rock and Roll McDonald's off. I forget. I don't know my Chicago street names. It's like a couple blocks off of Michigan. But this is just a legendary retail location. Oh, God.
No, go ahead.
I think it might exist still in Australia.
Sports Mart.
Unless this is, wait, no, this is Sports Smart. Never mind, different place.
Wow, this place is unbelievable.
Smart.
I just Googled
Smart.
It.
Sports Smart.
What do you Google?
I Googled the Sports Mart in Chicago.
Is this it? Unbelievable. Holy shit. It's incredible.
I know. You're talking about the 90s. You're talking about Michael Jordan. Like, you can't have that without this, like, eight-story Sports Mart, which, wait. Like, I remember being eight stories because you could see from the outside the numbers.
Oh, yeah, that's what, yeah, it has the 1 through 8 on the top. But
it looks like a storage facility.
Did each floor have its own brand? That's what it looks like here. Like, each floor is its own brand. It wasn't even separated by items.
It was departments. No, it was like women's, men's, baseball, stuff like that.
You guys ever been in a played against sports?
Oh, yeah. I still like played against sports.
Play against sports.
I only ever went to Modell's and Sports Authority. I think those are the only two real sporting goods stores I would ever go to other than like small mom and pop places.
Got to go to Moe's. Bankrupt. Blockbuster, number three for me. I mean, it's Blockbuster. It's that VHS smell. Wasn't the same when they got the DVDs, but nothing like those old cases. It just is something special. It just the empty box in front of the Blockbuster case. I miss it. I really miss it. Like, that would be cool. Like, that's a VR idea. If we live in a VR world, make me select a VR Netflix, like brick and mortar, where I go in and I go down the aisles and I look at all the stuff. VR with smell-o-vision too.
Oh.
And you get that popcorn bucket.
It did. The candy only just tasted better.
It did. The candy tasted better. And that Blockbuster popcorn bucket that only popped like a third of the popcorn.
If that. It just had a threshold where it either popped a third of it or burned everything.
What about the feeling when they didn't have what you wanted, so you went to go ask the guy behind the counter, you went through the return buckets, and they had it in the return buckets, and you got it?
That feeling. My two favorite Blockbuster stories. One was a movie with that, and I think it was Star Wars it was 97 when they re-released. It might have been, but I remember beating a kid to a shelf for Banjo-Kazooie
on
the N64.
What a game.
When the door opened. Yeah. Quite the time.
Pile driving.
Ken Jack, number three.
My number three is Pier 1. Pier 1 is a place where I never really buy anything at all, but I'll tag along with anyone who goes there and just like – waft it all in, baby. Because there's something about like that. It's not arts and crafts, but just like everything that is there just makes you want to like do handyman shit. You know, I'm like, damn, I really do want to buy this $70 planter and, you know, make a garden out of it, but I'm not going to do it. And it just, I don't know, man, it just smells so damn good. I've only ever been to like one as well.
There was one in Austin near the Lakeline Mall in Cedar Park. And then there was one in Bristol, Connecticut that I've been to. I've been in Pier 1 like twice, but I can see how it would smell nice.
It's so good. Oh, the one that was right next to the Home Depot for me.
I think it's the wicker.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Shit, I never thought.
Is it proper to call it Pier 1 Imports?
That's the name of the company.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which actually they filed for bankruptcy and then they're canceling their bankruptcy filing right now for some reason.
Because maybe
maybe they feel like they can get like actual like occupancy costs down with the renegotiating with the current. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, there's one.
It's their auction. Plaza. Never mind. They did the bankruptcy.
Yeah, one by Bristol Plaza in Connecticut. Shout out to that Pier 1. Been in there like one time. Moving on. Audience number three, McDonald's.
Yeah.
Smells good.
Yeah, I didn't put restaurants in here. That's a different ranking for me. But I do love a McDonald's. And you know what I love is when you roll up to the drive-through window and they open it up and you get the McDonald's smell coming through to your car.
you try to pull it into the car. Come on, give me more of that.
And it's even especially on a hot night. Like a hot night is like the perfect conduit for getting that McDonald's smell into your car.
And it's AC too, so it's AC plus the McDonald's smell. Oh,
so it's like it's like you're in a McDonald's being air conditioned.
Yeah. Oh, that feels good. Did you guys ever go to Friendly's?
I mean, I grew up with Friendly's.
I've never seen a Friendly's in my
Friendly's
life.
Friendly's is very regional. It's regional. Yeah.
I know that's super northeastern, but there's a thing at Friendly's which someone reminded me of, the Green Monster Sundae. Man, was that good. And I don't like mint. But the chocolate chip ice cream mint.
Yeah, they would.
Green Monster is so fucking good.
Trill, it would be the mint chip ice cream in like one of those fancy ice cream dishes, like the taller cup ones. And then they would use split in half peanut butter cups for the ears and M&M's or Reese's Pieces for the eyes.
And it was a big Marciano sherry right in the middle as a nose.
Yeah.
I just remember, like, the furthest I've ever driven east, like, not to Florida, has been, like, I was in Virginia, and I saw Sheetz for the first time. And it was like I was fucking looking at a gas station that I just, like, got transported to Tokyo. I was like, what is this? What is this, Sheetz with a Z? What the fuck is this?
I fucking hate Sheetz. A lot of options, Sheetz all bad. Sorry.
Stink.
except for their chicken finger fries aren't terrible. So I'm going to catch a lot of hate for that. Whatever. I've long established that take. Trill number two.
Number two for me, it's the home improvement store. And the reason I didn't specify size is because if it has lumber, it smells good.
Yes.
You smell like something's going to get done. And then also you get a gardening section too. So you can go outside, get the nice flower smell. It's everything is there.
Yep. I agree. I agree completely. It's going to appear soon for me, which I guess I'm giving it away because number two for me, I know, like, you made up a good point about food. You brought one up. Food is kind of tough. It's almost cheating because it's like, that's the point. It's food. It smells. But when you take over a mall, you just elevate to a different level. Even McDonald's don't take over malls like these two stores do. My number five being Auntie Anne's and number two being the Great American Cookie. Mrs. Fields as well. But there's something about the Great American Cookie that just screams mall. And you can smell that sweet, that semi-sweet morsel cookie from the other end of the mall. You're in fucking in Filene's at the other end of the mall, JCPenney, Lord and Taylor. That Great American Cookie, you can smell it from 300 yards away. And I think I've, for as many malls I've been to in my life, I think I've gotten a Great American Cookie probably less than 10 times my whole life. But the Great American Cookie just smells delicious. It's a great dessert flavor. I just feel like you're never in this position to get a cookie at the mall where you are with pretzels. But the Great American Cookie, Mrs. Fields, they're all still open. So what do I know? Ken Jack, number two.
My number two is Barnes & Noble. We hit a lot of the points on it. Just some about it, man. 10 times better than any library could ever be. Just makes you want to sit there, act sophisticated, even though you're not actually reading a book that's important. You're reading the fucking autobiography of Rob Blagojevich. Doesn't matter. You're in Barnes & Noble's, and it's great.
Audience agrees with you at number two. They have Barnes & Noble as well. I'm curious what number one is for you guys. I already gave mine away, basically. Because I will say my number one is different if this is a distinct list. And I'm curious if your best is also the number one of my distinct. Trill, I'll let you go first. Number one best store smell.
Number one is Nordstrom.
Oh, okay. Nordstrom. Great smelling. That is a good pick.
I don't know what it smells like, and I don't know if each Nordstrom has the same smell, but I do know if you blindfolded me and put me into a Nordstrom without any other senses, just by the smell, I could probably tell it's Nordstrom. I don't know why.
Smell test.
I just love, like, the combination of the fragrances and the clothes, and maybe they even have an in-house fragrance they use. It's just great. I love Nordstrom. I think Nordstrom's my favorite retail company. They're pricey, but I feel like they do the best at offering multiple selections across many different price points.
I agree. It's all quality.
You can go in and they'll have, like, you go to a tier, upper tier Nordstrom, you could buy Common Projects, you could buy some Nikes. So there's some, you know, like, there's something for a lot of people at Nordstrom. It isn't like Saks where everything's just ridiculously expensive.
I'm a noted hater of the Nordstrom Cafe, which is, I know people love, but there's a new Nordstrom in Manhattan and near Columbus Circle that has, like, actual very good restaurants. One's like Michelin star. Very good. But yeah, Nordstrom, that's a good pick, Trill. My number one is, I'm going to say Home Depot. I have no connection to Lowe's. I'm not related to them. Give me some money, maybe, because we're family. Maybe I'll put you number one. Home Depot, number one. Specifically the lumber section.
Yes, that's my pick, too, so I'm just going to pick.
Okay, your pick is, are you doing store or just home improvement?
Very, very specifically the lumber section of Home Depot.
Yeah.
The outdoor section too. I'll split it with the outdoor section because the outdoor section also smells fantastic.
Is there a Home Depot candle? Is there a Home Depot lumber section candle?
I'd fucking buy it.
I would buy it in a heartbeat.
Sounds good to me.
Doesn't look like there is. It does not. That is, what are you doing, Home Depot? Sell that, especially right now. I would buy 10 of them. The Home Depot lumber section is, even if you don't want to be at Home Depot, you walk by that section, you go, ah, damn, that smells delicious. Like, that just smells like I want to, like, eat that taste. It's lumber. easily number one. Also, the outside smell when you got a Home Depot that has a hot dog truck, pretty good too. But the Home Depot lumber section, number one for me. So I was thinking maybe one of you would have picked this. This would have been my number one on distinct smells. And I think that the two of you would have also put it at number one. The audience's number one is Subway.
No.
I just can't say. You would have put it as distinct? As distinct, though.
Oh. Well, yeah, I mean, as distinct, but I just.
Most recognizable? I hate it, too.
I hate the Subway smell, dude. It smells like the yeast in the bread or something, and it just gets in your clothes.
Pete Holmes has a good stand-up bit where he says, everything smells and tastes the same. It's like biting into one giant eraser. That's exactly it. It's so spot on. Yeah, I Subway smell, number one most distinct for me, not best. That's for sure.
Yeah, distinct. I think that there's also like the White Castle smell. Five Guys has a smell too. Like
Five Guys has a smell.
Really, really good, but it's this specific like peanutty smell. Chick-fil-A has it. Like you can definitely pick out Chick-fil-A from the peanut oil.
A couple other ones I like. Kohl's. I like the Kohl's smell.
Okay.
Kohl's smell gets hate. I like Kohl's smell. Abercrombie. I don't know if I'd like it, but I think if you like that smell, that's got to be up there because it's so distinct. Bath and Body Works I like, but only during Christmas time. I like the Bath and Body Works, yeah.
I like the casino smells in Las Vegas.
Oh, I love a good casino. Man, I don't know. Maybe I'm a sucker for table games. Even a bad casino smell, I'm all the way in.
Oh, yeah.
I smell that felt and that cigarette.
I just love walking into – I mean, I like the Mandalay Bay. When I went, it was like a coconutty smell.
Ooh.
But now, like, I like to think of the wind. The wind smells nice. The second time I mentioned the wind.
Go here. Yeah.
Apparently not a great dude, but a good casino.
No. Yeah, agreed. You go in the wind, you feel high. Like you're going to excess at night, and you're going to go play craps for a little while. Cosmo, again, mine. I mentioned Cosmo now twice as well. Kenjack, we got you back. I just want to confirm, Kenjack, would Subway, if this was a list of distinct smells, recognizable, would Subway have been up there for you?
Subway was on my list regardless. I had it on my it was my number 10 on this list because I initially thought it was going to be a distinct smell list, but a distinct smell draft. And I was like, I just need it on here regardless. It needs to be safe.
Yeah.
I had that and a Lowe's, Costco, and Bed Bath & Beyond and a few others.
Yep. Yep. Cinnabon is another one I want to put on there. Cinnabon recognizable, but I favor the cookies and the pizza. Anyway. And Kenjack's gone again.
Let's wrap it up.
Okay, he's here. Okay.
I got to pee so bad.
Yeah, we went a full almost 45 minutes on that, and I'm not shocked. You can't give us brands and expect us to not talk about them. Yeah. This is how it goes. All right. That's it. We're reviewing two movies this week. Middle of the week, we are reviewing a movie that is not on a streaming platform. It's on Vudu, technically. It's draft day. We're going to do draft day middle of the week. The NFL draft is Thursday. Makes complete sense for us to review draft day. It's a Browns movie. I fucking hate draft day. We'll talk about it, though, more in depth. And then on the weekend, Ken Jack gave this idea a couple weeks ago. We're going to watch The Core. So we're going to do draft day, middle of the week, and then The Core, which is on Netflix, will be the weekend movie. We got streaming movie nights this week. Just want to read these off really quick. Monday the 20th, we got on HBO Go, Marty Mush fights and Tommy Spokes for Shutter Island. Trill, you've been joining for the Marty Mush ones. Might make an appearance. Who knows? Never know. And then Tuesday the 21st, Empire Strikes Back with our newer hire, Joey Molinaro, Robbie Fox, Clem, and then Alex Sulkin, who is a producer and writer for Family Guy. He did the first Star Wars Family Guy. Huge Star Wars fan. Excited to have him. And then we got R.A., PFT, and Smitty for The Town on Friday the 24th. R.A. was actually in. Rear Ed was in. The Town, a little spit and chicklets crossover. So we got those three this week. That's it for Ken Jack and Trill. I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Have a good week at the box office. I just